union. But even then, as a conservator, well, maybe you could sue directly, but you know, that's a whole complicated game. You know, you're taking over another person's life and taking their power of decision away from them, and that in that itself involves a court process. No, power of attorney does not work for courts. It works everywhere else, but not for courts. You must represent your own interests in court, or have a licensed attorney.
May I share something? Sure. I've been listening and not hearing, but I cannot help my butterfly keep flying because I'm very excited. If you really meant to really study this, and once you learn about this, you become a fully pledged businesswoman and businessman yourself, because you could see the wealth out of this. It might not bring out right away, but the virtue is patient. What makes me enthused about this and really determined to be on top of all this, everything is on the Bouvier Black Law Dictionary. There's a lot of sites written law there that make a case and won, and you could just practically go over to that and use your own defense. What makes Mr. Bill boost me more and really perk me out of all this, even though sometimes I cry sometimes, because sometimes I'm still scared a little bit before way back there, but no more. And I'm grateful to Ron because he backed me up too all the way this. But what I'm saying is, guys needs to wake up, because now you're in the business. Let's make money out of it. Let's start kicking ass.
Thank you. Well, the
it's very
yes.
I'm really happy that I have this opportunity to learn this, which is something they always call me a sponge, because I'm very thirsty about knowledge, and I could go whatever.
Okay, thank you. Well, all right. So you see, anyway, on this, what we have here is the brief, and we've covered the first part was the point being made, and the second part is the authorities that come in to support your point. Now that we have the facts from the affidavit, the motion of what we want, the point we're trying to make, the next step, and the authorities that support us, now we get into the argument. Why should things be whatever they're going to be? And that's what starts on line 17 down here. The cause of action survives the decedent, that's the one who died, because it arises out of violation of a property right. Robert Melvin Anderson is a representative of Robert C. Anderson. Also, substitution would represent a change in form only and not a change in substance. The settled practice is to allow substitution of personal representative. Therefore, application of Robert Melvin Anderson to be substituted for plaintiff Robert C. Anderson should be granted. So that's the argument that we made. So if a person reads the judge would read the arguments, he would read all this sort of stuff, put it all together, and you've made your argument, what you think, why you should be granted the motion. Having done that, he now makes the decision. Or actually, we say the court makes the decision. And of course, if you're the court, that's a different story too. Okay, but basically, that there you have it. All right, so that's your brief.
If you're Robert Melvin Anderson, is there a conflict of interest in the court, you being the...
No, it just says right here, Robert Melvin Anderson is a representative of Robert C. Anderson. That's one of the requirements in the case up above, on this case law. Look what it says up here. That's why we have the authority to answer questions like that. See? It says right here, although this section is in permissive terms, provides a court may allow action or proceeding to be continued by or against his representative or successor in interest. Personal representative, person who has filed his suit before death, has, by custom and practice, absolute right to expect and demand substitution. Does that answer your question?
No.
Oh.
I'm speaking of, if this is a court of record, you then are the judge in this court.
hey, if the other side doesn't like it, they can always ask for a jury and pay for it.
That's all they can do. They can't.
Not if it's your court.
Yeah.
No, I'm the king.
Well, but I'm saying it's not a conflict of interest. You being the king and also being the representative of the plaintiff.
The king is presumed to be in the middle and fair.
More than one king.
Who's making the law around here?
You.
Unfair means you violated some law. But whatever I do is a law. It can't be unfair. It's not possible for a sovereign to be unfair. Okay? Now, your point about conflict of interest is a good point. Okay? But the thing is that it's only a conflict in somebody else's wishes. The king is the king of his world. And he's opened up his court. And your only protection as a defendant is if you call in a jury. Okay? You get 12 other sovereigns. Need a paper towel? You got the wall up there too. You want to get that before it stains it. Anyway, I don't know if you're getting that wall. You got a definite spill mark there. See up there in the green? Anyway, so that's why you have the authority. That's why you have, this is all the reasons for granting it. In this case, that was presented to the court, and yes, the sovereign did approve it.
Did one of the Andersons die partway through, and that's why this was presented as a motion?
Yes.
Thank you.
The senior Anderson died, so the junior Anderson, who went through all the same experiences, had all the same problems, and was his representative, fit all the criteria.
But this was a suit that was already in process.
And of course.
So that's when he died. That's what was done as a motion, not as one of the original facts of the case.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, now, there's the proof of service. Okay, now the proof of service.
You have another one, but I'll give you that.
Here's the proof of service. Now, this proof of service does not conform to the usual format. You'll notice that. There's a reason. The reason it doesn't conform is because it is attached to the package. It's part of it. When you filed it, this just is supplemental to the motion. It goes, it's part of the motion. It's the proof of service. If it were filed separately, you would have to have the whole case number and case name and so forth. Okay? That's why you don't see it. This is just one more page to the package rather than being a separate paper. And so basically the person who does the service says, I'm employed in the County of Orange, State of California. I'm over the age of 18 and not a party to the within action. My business address is, and then on November 24th, 1986, I serve the foregoing documents described as, and this names all those documents that we just looked at. Okay? And then it says at the end there that they were mailed, served on the interested parties in this action by placing a true copy thereof enclosed in a sealed envelope with postage thereon, fully prepaid in the United States Mail in Anaheim, California, addressed as follows. And it put the names and addresses of each person that got served. Then I.M. puts his name there. I have personal knowledge of the above facts. I'm competent to testify as to the truth of those facts if called as a witness. I declare under penalty of perjury that the foregoing is true and correct and that this declaration was executed in this town, November 24th. So that there, that last little paragraph is the boilerplate. So,
I find now that if you go into the post office and you buy a stamp, and they will get the address that it's going to, mm-hmm. and the stamp is predicated on that address, and you get a receipt with time, date, post office number, clerk name, and everything. So
sure.
It's verified very clearly that you have mailed this.
Sure, sure. You can get in your priority mail, you can get that tracking service. They've now computerized in the post office so that you get these really good tracking services if you choose it. And also, with priority mail, which obviously costs a lot more than the regular mail, okay, than first class mail.
Just first class mail. You get all us the stamps.
Well, you have to pay for the service.
No.
No.
Just a regular stamp.
37 cents.
Yep. Yep. Well, it depends on the weight of the envelope. They'll weigh the envelope and they'll take the destination, and all that goes on your receipt.
Oh, okay, that's the proof of mailing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, don't they charge for proof of mailing?
No, not that way. You're buying a stamp, all you're doing is getting receipt for it.
37 cents?
Yep.
Okay, because when I have in the past bought a proof of mailing and there was a separate charge, like 30 cents or 60 cents, something like that. So that's something I've never heard of before. But yeah, you know, computers have made things easier and they're providing more and more services that are kind of interesting, actually, in what they're doing. You can also design your own postcard and give them a list of addresses to send it to. They'll print the postcard, put the postage on it, and mail it. And any artwork you want.
Really?
Yeah. I almost did that on this thing when I sent out the notices. I almost did that just for the fun of it. But I decided, they're probably keeping a record of everything, you know, so I won't do it. But still, it was interesting that they had that service. You go on the internet. It's all done by internet, by the way. You upload everything. You know, it's interesting. Okay, well, anyway, that's the proof of service. And finally, the proposed order, ready for signature. And this order did get signed by the plaintiff, the sovereign of the court. Now, notice this. This is an order. Notice that Robert Melvin suddenly became a private attorney. See, he's no longer whatever else he was. Yeah, he's a private attorney. A private attorney is an attorney who is representing somebody on this case only. He is not holding himself out as a general attorney or a public attorney to the public. This is a private one-shot deal. Okay? Now, the court is defined as the person and suit of the sovereign. The court is an artificial entity. The court cannot speak for itself. It has no vocal cords. A portion of the court, called the sovereign, can speak, but then he can't speak for the court. He only speaks for himself. So how do you have the court speak when it has two parts, one of them real, one of them fictitious? See, you have... Yeah.
You're not attorney for the plaintiff, you're attorney for the court.
Exactly. You represent the court. Okay, did you want to see?
Yeah, I don't know if it's an error, but Robert Melvin Anderson versus Robert C. Anderson. Is that an error, Melvin and C., or...
Doesn't say that. Doesn't say versus Robert C. Anderson.
No, I'm just saying that because you have Robert Melvin Anderson...
Yeah.
Robert C. Anderson.
Yeah, Robert C. Anderson was the old plaintiff. The
All
new
right.
plaintiff has not been substituted yet.
Are we talking two different people here? Or
Yes. One's the father, the other's the son.
Oh, okay, cool. Because I thought you
Robert C. Anderson died.
I thought you'd go from Stroman to...
No, Robert, you see, the elder Anderson... died. He was the original plaintiff. We don't have a new plaintiff yet. That's what this is all about. This is an application to become the new plaintiff. Okay? So the case name is Robert C. Anderson versus whatever. Okay? And then there's the countersuit down below, which is, that's all stays the same. See, that doesn't change. Okay, that doesn't change. You have a case name. The case name is somebody versus somebody. Okay? That doesn't change. Okay? And then there was a cross-complaint here. The point is that the son is now applying to be the new plaintiff because the prior plaintiff has passed away. The important thing to understand is that this is how a motion is made. Okay? So we showed how a motion is structured, how you have to give a notice. You have all these elements. How you make a point, how you show the authorities, and how you argue it. Okay? That was all in part of the brief. Now, this is the proposed order. Okay? It says order, but it's not signed yet, so it's proposed. So this is given to the judge also or given to the court. Okay? So here's, is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. So now, here's the order. On reading the application and supporting declaration and points and authorities, and on reviewing the evidence and papers on file in this court, and it appearing from these that this is a proper case for issuance of an order for substitution, it is ordered that Robert Melvin Anderson be substituted for Robert C. Anderson as plaintiff in this court. The court further orders that the complaint be amended to reflect the substitution of plaintiff as set forth above. The court further orders that a copy of the related application, declaration, points, and authorities in this order be served upon all interested parties by plaintiff Robert Melvin Anderson not later than 5 p.m. December 8, 1986. Witness the seal of this court, and so forth. And so then we got... And then the private attorney signed it. Of course, that happened to be the son also, because he's the new sovereign.
Whose seal did he use there? The seal of the court?
Yeah, his own seal. That is his the court seal, his own seal.
His own seal.
Yeah, and you can have multiple seals for a court. If the clerk does it, the clerk has the clerk's seal. The judge does it, I suppose the judge has a judge's seal.
Well, would he have his own judge seal there, being a judge?
I don't know how they do things, but he could. All it takes is sovereign authorization. Do anything you want. Who's making the law here?
Well, I've never run into it, so I just...
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is that this is not a tight system. There's a lot of flexibility in it, a lot of different ways that these can go. Hey, everybody could have a seal if you want to do it that way. Or you could just have one seal.
Sure.
So it's pretty flexible. And it all is because of the fact the king lays down the rules. Now remember, you're trying to, you don't want to get too wild because you want to show, put on a good show. So I do not recommend that you do like I do and prosecute people for pink shoes. Okay? But you understand that you have to have some credibility and some reasonableness in the eyes of the other people. But you have a lot of flexibility. But there you have a complete motion, and it was the motion, by the way, was never answered by the other person, but it was an ex-party thing anyway. They didn't care. You want a new plaintiff? Fine, you got a new plaintiff.
Is the judge going to sign that order?
No. Robert Melvin Anderson, the privatus aeternatus, the private attorney, that's Latin. Okay? He signed it. He represents the plaintiff. And you got to remember, there were no permanent officers in that court other than the representative, because this was the attorney of record. He was not a, quote, licensed attorney, but he did. What actually happened before any of this happened, what happened was the original attorney that was on the case representing the plaintiff, he signed off of the case, and the son signed on as the new attorney. Okay? Then he made the motion for substitution. And then, because he represented the deceased sovereign, and he was the only one entitled to speak for the deceased sovereign, he approved his own application. I mean, there wasn't anyone else to approve it.
I'm kind of in awe that there's no place for the judge to sign.
Who's the tribunal?
You make a decision.
You know, look, the judge is the highest officer of the court, but he doesn't own the court. Think of it this way. You have a corporation, or not a corporation, just a company, okay? Now, the owner of the company, he ran his business and it grew. So he got busy, so he hired a manager. Right? Got some employees, hired a manager. Who owns the business, him or the manager?
The original owner owns the business.
Of course. Okay? So, since he owns the business, can he make decisions or does he have to defer to the manager?
Oh, of course.
Of course.
He signs off on all the decisions he has to make.
The manager is the highest officer of the company, but he's not the owner. The owner outranks the highest officer. The king outranks everybody. Okay? You're the sovereign of the court. That's what a sovereign is, the king or queen. Okay? So if you're a queen, you're still sovereign. And you own your kingdom. And you may hire personnel to staff, to assist, and the highest officer of your court is the judge. But he's like a manager. He can only do what you allow him to do. In a court of record carries its own definition. So in a court of record, the judge is not allowed to make any decisions. The tribunal is separate from the judge. Who's the tribunal? Yeah, the sovereign. He's the one that makes the decisions. The king makes the decisions. And if it's a court of record, he cannot delegate it to the judge. Because, hey, what does the judge know? He's only an officer. You know, the king is the one who's the authority and understands what's what and when, where, and so forth. Yes?
Are you saying that an attorney opened this case originally as a court of record?
No. As a matter of fact, he didn't even know it was a court of record. He just opened it. He didn't say what kind of court it was.
So when he left the case, then they announced it as a court of record.
No, I don't know where it got announced. But see, the thing is that that's another interesting point. You look at lawsuits, most lawsuits, they never say what kind of court it is. They just state their case. And they just roll with whatever the judge is in charge and so on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's presumed unless somebody raises the issue, and I raise the issue in the lawsuit. And it, look, when you're cognizant of it, you then do the things to lock in. You say, okay, I'm so and so, one of the people of California, and in this court of record, complain of whatever. Okay, so you've covered all these bases at once, but you might have filed a lawsuit where you didn't cover all those bases. You just gave your name and you're complaining of so-and-so. You never said what your status was other than plaintiff. And you never said what that it was a court of record. You just, all you know is you're in a court. I mean, that's normal people, right? That's what they do. So what you do is later on you wake up and you realize, hey, I should have made this a court of record. So what you do is you make a motion or some paper, whatever paper is flying through, okay? Maybe you're answering. Maybe you're replying to an answer. And you just casually say, comes now Joe Blow, one of the people of so-and-so, in this court of record, and answers the complaint. You just slip it in, okay? And that now you've got a court of record. You've defined it at some point. They're not going to object to it. Now, they might object, I suppose, when they start catching on to this, enough of these cases start going through. But right now, it just slips through.
Yeah.
You know? Because Sharpie attorney, the real shrewd ones, they look at that and they say, people, what's that? Well, there's no hints, really, because we base this on an interpretation of the preamble. Okay? That's not anywhere in this, okay? So, they won't catch that point. They won't catch the sovereignty thing, unless in your declaration of law you bring that out. But even then, that's heavy reading. Okay, you have to put it all together. Why are you in this class? Because you have to put it together. It isn't enough to just tell you. You got to explain it. So, I'll get you. So, and the other thing, the court of record, he looks it up in the dictionary. This one, this looks like a technical term. Looks it up, court of record, and it says right there in the dictionary, and he's got the latest best dictionaries, okay? And it says right there in his latest best dictionary, Black's Law Dictionary, 7th edition or 8th edition or 6th, whatever, a court of record can fine for or imprison for contempt and keeps a record of the proceedings, and that's all it says. Doesn't say anything about the tribunal being independent of the magistrate. Doesn't say anything about proceedings of the common law, and so on. And he looks at this and he says, court of record, oh, no big deal. You know, bam, shuts the book and he moves on. The surprise comes later. Okay?
Oh, it shows up in the points of authority.
Or somewhere, you know, and when he reads your lawsuit, it looks like you're on Mars. You know what the most common thing is that I hear when I go to court? The most common thing I hear from opposing attorneys, Your Honor, I don't understand his paperwork. And I put it right in front of him. I mean, I've explained it to you, but you see, there's nobody to explain it to him. He never got that in law school. That's right. And so they are truly at a loss. And it's worse than that, because I have known attorneys, three of them so far, okay, that actually took the time to listen to me. Well, we sat and we discussed it for several hours, like 5-6 hours at a time, and they don't get it.
Still don't get it?
Still don't get it. They sort of get it, but it is so contrary to all their training and experience that it just, you're in a different world. Everybody knows, and they are taught this. This is exactly what they say. They tell you that when you're in the courtroom, the judge is a 500-pound gorilla. What do you give a 500-pound gorilla when he demands a banana? You give him the banana. That's what they're actually taught, those words in the court. He is the do-all and be-all of the courtroom, and that's who you dedicate to, who you're addressed, and so on and so on and so on. Contrast that with what I do. When I go in the court, okay, we got a decoration up there. All right? He can't make any decisions. What else is he? He's a decoration. Now he does a little traffic control, you know. Next case, right? That's all he can do in my court. And if he gets smart about it, I'll fine him for contempt of court. Okay? What a different attitude. Attorneys absolutely cannot do that. They'll lose their license to practice if they try that stuff. Okay? So there is a difference. Okay, you gotta... Sorry.
I think it would be probably pretty appropriate to interject in reference to what the law notes are as to what a Nisi Prius court is.
All right.
Hey, by the way, Bill, is all this new information on your updated CD?
I've been showing it to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, it's not the one you got.
I know that. That's why I'm asking.
That's why. Did you fill out that little slip?
What little slip?
No. Yeah. I'll be mailing out the latest one.
Yeah, okay.
But in a couple of days, because I just finished this last night, you know, but in a couple of days I'll put it up on the website too, this same information. But let's see. Let us now, we're finished with the motions.
Oh, in talking about contempt of court.
Pay attention to this explanation and it'll verify your thoughts.
In relation to contempt of court, did you ever get the dollar off of that judge for the contempt of court on
no.
the traffic case?
No, we didn't. No, we fined the judge $1 for contempt of court because he issued a second order after he knew better. So we not only reversed his second order, just like we reversed his first order, but then we actually fined him. We held trial on him, and convicted him of contempt of court, civil contempt. And in fact, we even changed the law. We were a common law. We suspended the common law. We brought in the California Code of Civil Procedure as it relates to contempt. I think it was civil procedure or civil code, whichever it was. We brought that in. For the purposes, since he had expressed a preference for the codes, we judged him by his own choice of law. And then after we convicted him, we then took that out and put the common law back. Okay? And so we found him in contempt, like I said, and we fined him $1. 30 days later, he was gone. Because the presiding judge pulled him off of that case and 900 other cases that were under his wing and put him in some pocket of the county handling nothing but criminal cases in a small in a municipal court or something, and they brought in a new judge. Now see, he was gone, so there was no point in collecting the dollar because he was gone. See, the purpose of contempt is to enforce the authority of the court and to preserve the dignity of the court. Well, the dignity of the court was okay, there was no problem there. But he was bucking the authority by issuing that second order. So we fixed that with our own order, fined him, but then he was gone, so he was no longer a threat to our system. Then they brought in a new judge. The new judge pretended that he was just coming in and he was taking the place of the other judge. You know, he's just